the Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, good morning. It's strange to say Shavua Tov on a Thursday, especially because we're going to end the conversation with saying Shabbat Shalom. So I don't know what I'm meant to do. Maybe I'll just say Shana Tova to you. Yeah, let's just go with it. Shana Tova. Good enough for me.
Shana Tova. I hope that everybody had a good 2 days over the Chag. I didn't have chance to talk about some of the recommendations that were being made by the health ministry for people who were involved in tefillot prayer services over Rosh Hashanah. But in particular, there was a whole host of recommendations for the Baal Tekiah, the person responsible for blowing the shofar over Rosh Hashanah. So the first recommendation was that that person should have been 3 times vaccinated. That's the recommendation. And that that person, when blowing the shofar, had to maintain a certain social distance away from everybody else around him or her, in the case of people who were blowing the shofar. Then the recommendation was that the direction of the shofar blowing should be either towards an open window, or if that was not possible, that it should be directed towards the Aron HaKodesh, towards the parochet, which is the curtain that covers the holy ark in the shul, in order to be sure that there it wouldn't be directed at specific people. And the idea was to try and direct it towards some place where nobody would be. And in the event that it was necessary to have a person blowing the shofar who was not 3 times vaccinated, then it was actually recommended, would you believe, to put a mask over the exit of the shofar, to cover the outlet of the shofar with a mask, in the case that that was being blown by somebody who's not fully vaccinated. And of course it was recommended that there should be no shofar sharing. So you should have your own personal shofar.
Right. I can't imagine there's a lot of that that goes around anywhere.
I don't know. I mean, there was once a time when the shofar belonged to the shul, and whoever blew the shofar was just took hold of the shul shofar and blew it. But of course, these days, that's really not recommended.
No.
I don't know how many shofar. I don't know how many of the people who listened to the shofar actually witnessed a shofar that was covered by a mask. If you were one, I would be interested to hear about it.
Amazing. Yep. Yeah. Absolutely incredible. Right. Let's just talk about some of the political news or other news as well. Tension remains high across Israel following the escape of 6 security prisoners from an Israeli prison. So what is the latest on the situation?
Yeah. So this is just a whole host of failures within the prison system, which we're only really just getting to the bottom of. But 6 high security prisoners escaped on Monday from Gilboa prison. 4 of them had been sentenced to life in prison, one of the six was undergoing trial for a number of accusations that were leveled against him, and one had been held on administrative detention. And this has really triggered a huge, first of all, crackdown within the prison system, such that we understand that the prison authorities have put quite a number of key security prisoners into solitary confinement. There's been a lot of increased security that's been brought within the prison system, such that it has created unrest within the prisons. There have been riots within the prisons. There have been reports about some of the police, some of the security guards within the prison service actually having been attacked. And in particular, there's been quite a lot of unrest around and about across the West Bank, within East Jerusalem. There has been just this whole incident has created a huge ripple effect across the West Bank, across East Jerusalem, within Israel's prison systems. This has really had a major effect, and there is concern that it will continue to go on. It has caused the security services to decide to not lift the restrictions that were imposed over Rosh Hashanah, which is a general annual event that the IDF generally imposes a lockdown of some sort, prevents crossings from within the West Bank backwards and forwards to Israel over the Chagim. This time around, the crackdown, the lockdown should have been lifted at the end of Rosh Hashanah last night. But in light of the events that have gone on within the prison system, in particular the prison services, the IDF decided not to lift that particular crackdown. So at the moment, a great deal of tension across the West Bank, across Israel's prison systems, within East Jerusalem. A number of Palestinians confronted IDF troops at 8 West Bank flashpoints. They were burning tires. They were throwing rocks. They were throwing Molotov cocktails. There were reports about unrest where live fire was actually used towards IDF troops that had been deployed there. And the way that this prison break had actually been discovered was ironically when a farmer saw these people running through his field, and this raised his suspicions because obviously he is in relative close proximity to Gilboa High Security Prison. He must have suspected it had something to do with the prison break, and he then alerted the authorities. But within the prison itself, there had been no idea that this prison break had actually successfully been undertaken until such time as this farmer raised the alarm and made the security services aware of what he had seen. In the meantime, there is a massive manhunt for those 6 prisoners who have escaped. Up until now, this is, I think, the 4th or the 5th day that this manhunt is being undertaken. It continued over the Chag as well, over Rosh Hashanah. Up until now, none of those 6 escapees have managed to be apprehended. They were reported to be in various different places, some reports of them being in Beit She'an, heading towards the border towards Jordan, which is in that area. There were some reports that they might have gone back to their homes. Lots and lots of confrontations, lots of issues, general unrest, general concern across the board as things stand at the moment. And of course, let's not forget the celebrations when the word came out that these prisoners had escaped, massive celebrations across with their hometowns. And so at the moment, the whole situation is just unpredictable, and a lot of security effort being directed towards trying to bring things under control, including trying to apprehend those 6 people who escaped from the Israeli prison.
It's a very unusual type of event for Israel, isn't this?
This is really the worst prison escape that we can recall in Israel's history. It seems to have been a cataclysmic series of failures within the prison system. There are reports, speculation that there might have even been involvement by some of Israel's prison security guards in digging the tunnel that allowed these 6 prisoners to escape. Tunnel digging, of course, is one of Hamas's specialities. 2 of the escaped prisoners were members of Hamas. The other 4 Palestinian Islamic Jihad members. And of course, tunnel digging has become a certain speciality. It would seem as if though the tunnel was dug from outside of the prison rather than from inside the prison outward. It seems as if though there were teams of people operating outside of that prison without being apprehended for probably years. I don't know. These tunnels couldn't have been dug within a few days or within a few months. And this is probably something that's been going on for years. And of course, one of the prisoners in particular, a very, very high security threat, somebody who is very, very well known, as some sort of a VIP status within the whole security prisoner arena. And someone who's very, very well known, has been in an Israeli prison before. He's been released from an Israeli prison. He's even been detained by a Palestinian Authority security at some point. So he's been a little backwards and forwards in terms of the whole security area. But currently, Zakaria Zubaydi, very, very notorious commander in Fatah's Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigade terror group, has been detained in prison and escaped while on trial for something like 24 crimes, including attempted murder.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely terrible. You know, when you actually think about the consequences of this, it is very, very, very worrying.
Yeah, I mean, it's just created a whole level of unrest across Israel's prison service right now, which needs to just be taken control of. And because the security services within the prison has decided to really crack down on all prisoners in order to try and regain control over the prisons, this has come with a lot of consternation, a lot of unrest and opposition from within the prisons, and indeed from outside the prisons as well.
Israeli Foreign Minister Yair Lapid has left on a snap visit to Moscow to meet his Russian counterpart. Do we know what precipitated this?
Not really. He's gone off to visit, to hold a meeting with Sergei Lavrov in Moscow. No other information really has been given to us about what he intends to do there. I mean, it would be very unusual for him suddenly on the day after Rosh Hashanah to get up and run off to Moscow unless there was not something very, very important, very urgent that needed to be discussed on a face-to-face basis. And there's nothing absolutely obvious right now going on around the borders, whether there might be a situation in Syria, whether there might be a situation with Iran. Nobody really knows, and the press hasn't really given any indication of what might be on Yair Lapid's agenda. We also are told that he will meet with Israeli diplomatic staff at the embassy in Moscow. But in terms of the actual conversation that he will have with Sergei Lavrov, currently unclear, but clearly very, very pressing indeed. So I suppose we will all be waiting very patiently as to whether there might be some press briefing that will come out after that meeting that's due to take place later today. We will be waiting patiently to see if any indication is given at all as to what suddenly caused him to need to jump up and run off immediately after the end of Rosh Hashanah.
Look, we also know that Benjamin Netanyahu and Vladimir Putin had a very close but an interesting relationship. Do we know what the relationship between Bennett as well as Lapid and the Russian government is like?
I think the best way to describe it would be developing. I don't think that there is any really pre-existing relationship to speak of. And I think that the relationship with the new government is one that's just in the process of developing. I think that Prime Minister Netanyahu, when he was in office, had a much more kind of senior diplomatic standing on the world stage, whereas Prime Minister Naftali Bennett, less so, and needs to be, needs to establish himself in order to get to there. And of course, President Putin, very much a senior leader on the international stage. So it almost seems as if though Putin holds potentially a slight upper hand in any meeting that might take place, if indeed Prime Minister Naftali Bennett would meet with him. But at the moment, there is no talk of any meeting between the two leaders, currently only at the level of foreign ministers. And I think, again, Yair Lapid establishing himself as a diplomat, as a leader on the international stage. And I suppose that this meeting in Moscow will help to further his standing on that international stage as he goes and finally has the opportunity to do some face-to-face meetings, which is something that obviously has been avoided and not been that common over the last few months.
And finally, we don't have a lot of time, but Israel's R number has dropped below 1 for the first time in the fourth wave. What is the latest corona update?
Yeah, so this is very pleasing. Even though there were reports of hundreds, if not thousands, of people trying to get tested both before Rosh Hashanah and indeed during the course of Rosh Hashanah, I'm not quite sure whether that was because people might have been concerned about having become exposed to somebody else who was diagnosed with corona. Not sure exactly what precipitated that huge influx of people trying to get tested. But the latest reports coming out last night suggest that Israel's R number is now 0.95, which means it's dropped below one for the first time in this wave. At the beginning of the week, it was reported to be already 1.05, which even though above one at that stage was still considered to be a massive improvement from the previous week. And slowly but surely, the numbers are going down in spite of the fact that schools have returned and potentially more people could have been infected. And we have been told by the ministry, by the people who are releasing these numbers, that the numbers going down do not reflect a situation where it's because there are less tests. Because over the Chag, of course, we could have expected that there would have been less tests. And we've been told specifically that the better numbers are not because there have been less tests. There have been a similar number of tests week on week, but simply that the number of infected people is going down. It seems as if though the booster vaccination, at least for now, is playing its part and helping. And fortunately, people were able to have a Rosh Hashanah, which was relatively free of restrictions, even though you were supposed to have a mask on your shofar. But other than that, it seems that the restrictions were relatively, you know, in short supply. People were able to get together, which was pleasing. And of course, just as a point to end, those people who are fasting today for Tzom Gedaliahu, I wish that you would have a meaningful fast. It's a very fascinating fast. Why the governor of Judea should be named in a fast day. But that's a discussion that we might have on another occasion.
Anthony Reich, thank you. As always, wishing you a Shabbat Shalom. And we'll catch you on Monday morning.